welcome back to Extra Feature Interview. Today we have a fantastic web series called Danger Pay. We have the star here, Carolyn Kennedy, right?
That's correct.
That's great. How come it's only 6 episodes? I wanted more.
Well, we did one season with the 6 episodes, and we had plans to shoot a season 2 in early May this year, and things kind of went a little awry with a lot of chaos. There was a couple of nominations that came out of Los Angeles for Brent and myself. Brent is my co-star in the series for Outstanding Lead Actor and Lead Actress in a Comedy from LA Web Fest. So we had to abort the screening. I had a couple of other things come up as well. I had to go to Toronto for the Toronto Screenwriting Conference about a week and a half prior. 3 days later, we ended up going down to LA where Danger Pay screened at Sony Studios. And then when we came back, I had some network interest in developing the show as a TV series. So I'm currently in the works of, you know, working at reframing and reshaping the series with additional characters and a bit of an additional setting. And it's kind of becoming a little bit of a different series out of what was inspired by the web series.
Can I ask questions about that, or is that off limits?
You can ask a couple of questions.
Okay. How many more characters?
I think I'm looking at about 7 kind of recurring characters in the office. Michelle and Woodrow's relationship is still going to be the same, working for each other, but I see it now being more of a small boutique law firm instead of in Woodrow's house.
I think that's great. That was one of the questions I had in my notes. Would this be a series? Because I could totally see a television show out of this by just watching it.
Thank you.
Like, I felt I was watching a pilot because they're very short. They're 6 to 7 minutes. Some are 5.
Yes.
Was that your goal in the end, or was this just, I wanted to do this?
Well, I felt like it was really speaking to me as something I needed to do. These kind of characters were coming into my imagination, and it felt like something I needed to write. And I wanted to write something that I could actually shoot and make happen, because it's one thing to write a script, but then if you need, you know, a budget of multi-millions, it isn't going to be happening. So I kind of worked it around writing the script in a method that I could shoot it in my own house. And that meant the home office dynamic, and that's kind of how it came about. Whether that was the plan, I wouldn't say so. I mean, I've been really surprised by the accolades and the attention the series received. And I think especially when we filmed episodes 3 to 6, we realized we had a real gem that was happening. The cast and the crew were really gelling. You know, people were really holding back laughter until cut was yelled, because the moments were just getting so silly. And I think the tension between Brent's character and my character also was really evolving. We were getting into a good rhythm with each other comically.
I have to agree with you. So you have a house office in your house, or you had to change all that?
I had an office in the front, so that's where we filmed everything.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, the various callers that come in, say, in episode 5, you know, the introduction of Mike Panzetti, those types of characters, we just use different corners of the house never move locations. And even the coffee shop in one of the episodes, that is actually my basement that is set decorated to look like a coffee shop.
Seriously? That was your basement?
Pardon me?
I'm impressed that was your basement.
Yes, it was.
I thought for sure you must know somebody, because it looked really good. At least you really shot it well then.
Thank you. It's always about, I guess, framing things in a certain way to, you know, show people what you want them to believe. So you can, you know, accomplish a lot of things by being creative.
I agree. I found it very claustrophobic, I guess. But I think that was more of a budget thing than anything else. I found you were very locked into your sets.
Yes. Yes, very much so. Because you are working in a house. And, you know, we had, I would say, probably with cast and crew on hand, probably at least 15 to 18 people every day.
Oh, wow.
So it's getting a lot of people in hidden corners, but, you know, we had sound and makeup and craft services and, you know, the assistant camera person and everything all the way down the wire. So
that's great. Your first episode was called The Early Bird Gets the Worm. It's kind of self-explanatory as you watch the episode.
Yes, it is.
Now, you have a Dirty Dancing reference in it. I thought that was funny.
Yes, I did.
I thought that was good because Mandy loves Dirty Dancing, so I was relaxed. I just laughed at that because I just did talk to Mandy. Who wrote the shorts? Was it you, or is it a group of you?
I wrote all the scripts. I also produced all the episodes and then acted in the episodes, and I also edited episode 1 and 2.
Now, how long did it take you to do a writing of one script? I mean, 7 minutes does take a while to write, people don't realize.
It does. It does. I would say because, like, especially episode one and two were my first scripts that I had ever written. I had never written anything before. So for me, it was a little bit of a process figuring it out. Once I kind of had the initial kind of outline of what I wanted happening, it was just a matter of, you know, getting some tightening up of a few areas, and then we were ready to go. So I'd say it was about a month that it took to do the episodes one and two. And then when we did 3 to 6, I had kind of predetermined roughly 26 episodes when I did my initial writing in that month preparation prior to shooting, and then narrowed down which the first two episodes were going to be. And then when we went to do 3 to 6, I kind of went through my, ideas that I had plotted out and thought logically what would be the best for 3, 4, 5, 6. And then I just kind of expanded on the original ideas. So I'd say maybe 2 to 3 weeks to plan out the additional 4 episodes because there was already some framework there.
I forgot to ask one question earlier for the Sony Studios. Is a pilot coming soon?
Well, we don't know about that now, do we? So it's going to depend on what's happening with the network, but I have a pilot script that I'm currently reshaping right now, a character Bible that's come to life. The show is still kind of evolving. There's still some more things happening, but I think here that's quite common that, as you kind of scratch the surface on this idea, more things come to light to you with what needs to be there. So I'm really liking the direction that it's going in. And like I said, there's a couple of networks I've been chatting with right now, and there's definite interest in the characters and what it looks like. I think I just have to get that pilot script tightened up to where I'm happy with it, and then we'll see what happens. So
we just need Mike Panzetti still around. That's all I ask.
That is correct, and that actually is a little cameo role that's played by my husband.
Oh, I didn't know that, but I love that character. I thought it was a really nice add-on.
Yes, he refuses to be on camera and seen, but I convinced him to do this like a George Steinbrenner type character, you know, where we just shoot over the shoulder and leave him very mysterious.
It worked. It really did work. Okay. I'm going to take episode by episode and just discuss it as much, and I'm sure I'll find more questions.
Sure.
Okay, and we're going back to Early Bird Gets the Worm. Did you do multiple takes on the shot? It looked like there was some editing on shots.
Yes, there was. Because we have to shift angles and, of course, different points of view over the corner. So there was a couple of takes of each scene. And then, of course, from different viewpoints and then editing. Like I said, I edited that episode. So it was my first learning experience in trying to understand, you know, comedic timing and working with something with editing with multiple takes from multiple angles.
So what was it like walking in the room and to seeing multiple sex toys sitting on a table and having Woodrow just passed out? I mean, I know you guys practice, you train, you know what you're doing, you rehearse. So what's that like first time? The crew must have been killing themselves.
They were killing themselves. They found it very funny. And of course, set decorating with, you know, the other objects on the desk and everything was quite a humorous undertaking. But, you know, I think the best thing you can do when you're acting in that moment is to just be busy doing something else. And when you open the door, you just have to see it. You have to see it as you would see it if you weren't expecting it, and just take it in and let it wash over you and affect you however it's going to affect you in that moment. It was a sight to see, regardless, right?
Well, I agree. Why did she take the job was one of my questions I wrote. Is she that desperate?
I think, there was a little bit of backstory that was going to be coming unveiled in season two as to some of her motivations and her financial circumstances as to why she needed to have this job. And, obviously there's always that question of, you know, how much would you be willing to, you know, put up with or tolerate for really good money? You'd have to wonder that question. And that was an interesting thing that I wanted to explore.
Because I got to say, I didn't know what Woodrow did in the first episode. I had no idea what he was doing. And I'll be honest about that. I was kind of like, okay, I need to watch episode 2 to find out what's going on.
Yes.
Because I thought that was really cool. I liked the woman that came in. I think that's episode 1. I didn't make a note on that.
Yes.
Now, the church thing, where did that come from? Because he seems to get all his clients from church.
Yes, I know. And I just felt like it was the most obscure thing to have if you had somebody who was totally not church-like, but they were milking the church crowd and portraying one persona to a group of people, but being very different on the other hand. And for whatever reason, this Ms. Stilton character came to me as being like pious and wealthy. And it just seemed to me to give the most conflict to that type of scene is to have someone who'd be believing him to be one way when Michelle is very clearly having her first impression be that he is distinctly something else.
Okay, I'm going to make a comment here. I may get in trouble. You have you're always wearing the same outfit for the first three episodes.
I don't think I did.
On episode four, you change. I will definitely say I do. It looks like a very similar skirt. Kind of. I don't know what the proper
term. They are deliberate changes in outfit, though. I think if you go back, you might see. But I have similar style type things. There's a purple dress, and then there's a different dress, which is bluish, but it is close. I can see why you'd say that in episode two, but it is different.
How long did it take you to shoot each episode?
Well, we shot episode one and two in one day, and then three, four, five, six in 2 days. So I would say an average of two episodes in a day. But of course, they're not shot from beginning to end. They were shot all out of sequence. So when we shot episode three, four, five, six, the final scene of episode six was the very first shot of the day.
Oh, wow.
I can tell you, I'm sure you'll appreciate that even more because we really got the energy going off to a very good start.
Yeah, okay. Now, in the throw it away, my pride, I have no same office, doesn't matter. And then I asked myself, what does this guy do? Because episode two, I still don't know what he does.
And okay, I know
that now, but I didn't know that by episode two. And I thought that was kind of funny. And the one thing I noticed that I knew was a real something, the post-it notes around the computer gave it away.
Why is that?
Because you had a ton of them. I'm like, she just got this job. There's no way she's going to have 50,000 post-it notes around her computer.
Oh, that's funny, actually, because I have been a paralegal in my real life. And I guess being a little bit of a perfectionist type of person, I felt those characters were something that would apply to Michelle. And being overzealous, like, you know, there's a lot of information you need in the beginning, you know, so-and-so's extension, the password for this, the password for that, the, you know, number to call for the courier, those things you don't know right away. So I would always make a habit of putting post-it notes with miscellaneous information and sticking them on places, especially in the beginning. And later I could take some down.
Oh, that's funny. See, these are just things I noticed. I'm making notes.
Yeah.
How did you feel, Michelle? You think Michelle feels about being bought off?
You know, I think she has mixed feelings about it. I think in one way, she's kind of questioning on where her own boundaries are going if she was so easily bought off. And on the other hand, I'm thinking she's kind of questioning and wondering if this is actually so bad, if it's something, you know, that she has to tolerate, but there's maybe something in it for her, especially if it's a financial reward, which is the kind of reason for her taking the job in the first place. You know, if you're tight with money and somebody hands you, you know, $100 or $200, like, would you kind of be silent and just kind of take the blame for something? I wonder.
I don't know. I was hoping, now I knew because the episode, I wanted Michelle to go shopping. I wanted to see what she was going to go do because I thought that'd be kind of fun.
We need a bigger budget.
Yes. Did you want the episodes to be longer?
You know, they kind of ended up being what they were. And like I said, I felt with season two, I wanted to give a bit more backstory and a little bit of presence on maybe some scenes beforehand on what brought Michelle there. So I kind of wanted to just dive in with this first season into the daily conflicts of this unusual situation and get people wondering why she was there in the first place. I did have to edit down a little shorter and be a little you know, axing some scenes perhaps that I liked still, but I would say that for the most part, the episodes ended up being around the length that I had written them to be.
Okay, good. Now I have to ask, where did you find Brent?
Brent actually was a actor in an acting group that I was together in, and we had gotten to know each other over a year. And initially I was thinking of kind of doing, you know, an even lower budget version of Danger Pay. It just grew into being something bigger. I was thinking of, you know, maybe I could be Michelle and I could just have this boss who would be kind of a talking head across behind me, and maybe I wouldn't even film who he was and he'd be this mysterious face. But that ended up kind of becoming Mike Panzetti's character. And then this Woodrow character just evolved out of seeing Brent doing some of the scenes and monologues he was doing in the class. I just felt he usually gets pinned in being, you know, like Ronald DeFeo Jr. in the Amityville horror movies. He actually portrayed that in the Shocking Truth TV series. So he gets put in those types of roles, the murderer, the, you know, killer of some sort. And I kind of thought he has a brilliant sense of humor and he's got such good comedic timing. And they were just, you know, getting to know each other for a year and working together, I felt there was some comedic timing. So I wrote the scripts and had him read for the part of Woodrow, and it was really kind of a sealed deal. He was happy to do it and he loved the character, and I felt we had a good comic match.
Is there a reason why he's dressed up like a sleazeball lawyer? Was that a total plan of yours?
It is a little plan, yeah, because, you know, he kind of marches to the own, you know, the beat of his own drum. He's living in his own house. He clearly hasn't worked out well working in the legal system. So he kind of does his own thing, you know. He's got his career and his paper, but maybe he's not the best lawyer in the business, and working at, you know, standard firms, clearly that type of behavior doesn't fly. So he's now on his own, doing his own thing. You know, he's being Woodrow.
On episode 3, you have named agoraphobia.
Yes.
And I thought you did an excellent, excellent job. I do felt the first two were okay. I like them. But I thought 3 were going somewhere with it. I thought you finally found your stride, I guess is what I'm looking for. Maybe you don't.
I agree with you 100%, and I think, like I said, it's partially given in fact. I think that there was a 6-month break between filming episode 1 and 2 and filming episodes 3 to 6. And when we did episode 1 and 2, you know, I was working with, you know, students who were coming to operate the camera and very kind of people who were learning at their job. So it was, you know, where there were some technical issues we had to work around. But when it came to episodes 3 to 6, I had now gelled and met with a very experienced director of photography, a DP, and we had some very more experienced hands in various departments. Audio was improved, everything. So I think with working with more experienced people, we had a little bit more time for play on the set as opposed to working on the technicalities. And I think that elevated things and the energy, of course. Everyone was happy to be back, the original people that we kept. And then the new people who came in just add this new life force to everything with their added skills.
Well, I apologize. I did find that. I loved the agoraphobia idea. It worked so well for me.
Thank you.
And you convinced me of it. I'm kind of like, maybe she is right, because I've only spent 2 episodes with it, but he never leaves the house. He always seems to be there.
Yes.
And then you take the day off, which is my favorite part.
Yes, yes.
And then he finds you in the coffee shop. I couldn't stop. I thought that was hysterical.
Thank you. And again, that was my basement, so that was a fun scene.
And
to
then
do.
He takes her muffin, and I thought that was just perfect.
It's totally something he would do.
And I totally agreed with it. I'm like, yeah, I could see him doing that. And then I have a note here, because I guess at this point I was getting comfortable with everybody. Is he based on somebody you know?
No, not at all. He's just morphed bits of pieces of odd behavior, you know, that you could think of or imagine, and perhaps some stories that might be authentic but with twists to them, you know, to make them obviously entertaining. Real life isn't as entertaining as something that's scripted and written. So, you know, if you take a seed of something out of reality and morph it, sometimes it becomes very funny.
Well, you did a perfect job.
Thank you.
And then on 5, again, I think the stride is showing up. I think you, like I said, 1 and 2 were okay, but I thought 4, 5, and 6, boom, you were on it.
I agree with you. And I have to confess, I think episode 5 is my personal favorite. I really liked the different blend of characters I was introducing and showing. I liked the pace of it. I liked kind of the whole story throughout it. So, you know, it kind of that I've been feeling that is the strongest episode. That is the episode that got the nomination for the Rosie Awards, the Alberta Film and Television Awards for us. And that was also the episode, one of the 2 episodes selected by LA Webfest. They selected the pilot and that one.
I agree, because I have the soy milk one made me laugh. Everybody calling in made me laugh. I really felt you as a writer were comfortable with your character finally and willing to diverse the script and not be about Michelle all the time or Woodrow.
Yes.
And Mike Benzetti shows up, so that was
interesting. It was a gem of a moment, of course. Like I said, that was my husband playing that part. He's got a brilliant voice, and it's just so kind of syrupy and rich. And he, of course, loved playing a dirtbag lawyer. It was
and in 7 minutes, you introduce a twist. Mm-hmm. It works. I'm laughing.
Good.
And I think I could see why it won an award. It works well. I think that is your best episode. I will agree with you 100%. I think it was right. 6 was too short for me. I mean, 6 is right, but it's very short.
Yes, I agree as well. And I think, you know, when I was going through and editing, I had initially kind of wanted and thought about, you know, 5 being the strongest. When the edit came out, I was thinking about putting that in 6, but I can't recall which plot point. There was an integral plot point. I think it was the introduction of Mike Panzetti. And Mike Panzetti is mentioned in episode 6.
You are correct.
And that's why I felt I needed to still keep this episode ahead of 6, even though I felt at the end it was the stronger episode. But sometimes it's hard to tell, especially as I said, these are kind of the first six things I've written and been through the shooting process. I would say if there's one thing I've learned, you can't tell from the script always until after you shoot and see the edit as to what maybe might be the strongest.
Yeah, but if you switched them around, the joke wouldn't have worked at the end.
Right.
You would have lost your punchline, and I think that was great. Do you find Michelle now has to do all the work because of the muffin scene in 4? Like, she has to go get she has to go get the cleaning. She has to go get his groceries. Like, I do find she's his personal shopper.
Yes, I think she's kind of just getting the fact that this job is a lot more than just, you know, being the paralegal. I think she's understanding that the expectation is there. She's going to have to do more. But, you know, she's in this pickle where I think she needs the money and she's got to suck it up and do it. It's not, you know, it's kind of almost a humiliating experience sometimes to realize the things that you put yourself through and do. And, you know, would you actually tell people, I go and get this guy's dry cleaning. I go and, you know, get his muffins for him or whatever it is that he needs. You know?
This is maybe a guy girl thing, but I find most women do talk about those things, what they do at work. And maybe guys are a little more quiet. I know my wife would bring it up 24/7. I would hear all about it.
Well, probably venting in private, yes, but probably not, you know, hi, this is what I do for a living, and I do this, this, and this in my job. You might gloss over and sugarcoat it to say, you know, I'm a paralegal, but you might not say being a paralegal involves this, this, and this.
I don't know. Could you keep quiet about the sex toys on the desk? I don't know. That one might come up in general conversation for me.
It might.
So back to episode 6. I have to ask, where did you get the pair of chaps?
You know, that's a delightful story because I had this idea about these chaps that needed to be done. And of course, they needed to be fitting Brent. So I contacted actually a very good friend of mine and I asked if she could sew them for Brent to fit him. And so sure enough, she did. And she sewed them right down with his measurements, the perfect size and the perfect fit. So they were custom made for him. And as I mentioned, that was the first shot of the day on shooting 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh. So kicking off 2 days of shooting, here's Brent, you know, and the leopard underwear that, you know, I pictured him wearing as well. The wardrobe person went to buy it, but she could only get an extra small. That was all that was available.
Oh,
so
no.
Poor Brent had to squeeze into these, and they were very, very tiny. And then on top of that, putting on these chaps, but he was so, you know, happy in his moment. And I remember being, you know, kind of in my area where makeup and hair was being done, and I was on the other side of the wall hearing this scene being taped on the other side of the wall from where I was. Brent came in his wardrobe was like, what do you think? he says to me, he goes, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to start singing and none of them knows I'm going to do it.
That's awesome.
He had it completely ready and he just owned the chaps.
So you shot. So that's the first scene because he's just sitting there and the camera comes right on his butt for the end. And I thought it was perfect because I'm like, am I getting this guy naked? Because that's what I'm thinking. And I think it was work, but I like the whole Mike Panzetti joke. He had an answer for Michelle. I go, no, it's Mike. I'm like, okay, that works too.
Sure does. Sure
so
it
I
does.
Thought that was just fabulous. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, clearly there's something suspect about anything Woodrow says.
Oh, for sure there is.
And I like the moment. It was kind of the first moment we saw Woodrow on his own, you know, aside from maybe where he does the details to the mug.
Yes.
We get a glimpse of him on his own or out in the car. But aside from that, you know, we never really see him being his full weirdness. And that to me was kind of the full of it right there.
Is it wrong I wanted more Woodrow?
No, I don't think that's wrong because I think that's the way the show ended up being. You know, Woodrow's character was just priceless. I don't know how he came to my imagination the way he did and the way Brent brought him to life. But I thought the two things just combined together and whatever Brent did with it was just amazing.
So you said recently you went to a screenwriting conference in my hometown. I didn't even know. I would have dropped by and said
yes,
hi.
Yes, I did. It was in April.
Oh, so my birthday. Okay, a while ago. So did you have these scripts ready or did this help you write it? Was this written in April? I don't even know when this was written.
No, actually, this Danger Pay was shot prior to this, and this was already being screened and winning some awards at the time, and then that's when the trip came up to go to Toronto to do the screenwriting conference. It was a week before LA Web Fest, so all 6 episodes were already out.
So how'd the screenwriting process go? Did you learn something you would do differently that you did now, or you're still happy with what you did and you wouldn't do anything differently?
you know, I'd have to tell you, because, you know, learning and trying something the first time, I think you really learn by doing. That's very, very important. But of course, now I'm getting into writing stuff that, you know, is different from web. Web is kind of its own thing, and it's very creative and freeing, and you're not meeting structures the way that you need to when you're doing, for example, a television series. You know, there's a lot of structure that needs to be there. Even for a feature film, there's a lot of rhythms and structure and things that are underneath that people don't appreciate are there, and the reason why they sometimes maybe find something a good movie or a bad movie. Maybe there's not, you know, certain elements that needed to be there that the writer should have put in that would make it stronger or better. And sometimes you don't always know why you don't like it, but something's missing. So I think now, you know, I'm kind of getting into this next level of writing. I've been studying screenwriting for the last 10 weeks here in Calgary as well at the Calgary Society of Independent Filmmakers. So I'm really trying to hone in on my craft, because I have a few features that are burning on me right now that I'm trying to work on. And I want to make sure I kind of get it right on what needs to be there for a feature. And then as I mentioned in this pilot, there's a lot of structure that needs to be there. So now it's taking the original ideas and making sure that there's enough structure in the pilot that it's going to be enough meat there to work on and for a network to see 5, 6, 7 seasons of a show available.
Well, I've seen 6 episodes per episode, and I definitely think there's meat already there. If I'm laughing about Muffin, like, I think Woodrow having a bigger office, like you said, more ensemble cast, you definitely have it. I can see it here.
Thank you.
Like, I'm seeing it. I mean, I'm not a writer in any way, but I'm like, yeah, I can see that happening for you. Now, what was your budgets for these?
I was ultra low budget because I shot everything in the house, but I'm a bit of a believer that nobody should work for free. So I paid everybody out of my own jeans be on set and work. I paid Brent to act in it. I paid, you know, my camera people, my sound people, everybody who was on set, script supervisor, everything. I feel there's a degree of professionalism that happens. And I'm not saying it's full rates, but I'm saying, you know, a thank you of money from me to them in exchange for their services and adding value to the project. I just think it brings things to the next level to do that. And people appreciate you doing that, right? So it adds a little bit of professionalism to the project. So budget, I'd say for the entire thing of the episodes I have on IMDb, that was approximately $10K, but that includes buying some equipment and other things that were needed for the shoots, some of the audio equipment and cameras and stuff. So probably the actual shooting, if you minus the equipment for the 4 episodes, cost of catering and everything that needs to be done in an indie film, probably, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 Canadian.
That's not bad. That's pretty reasonable, I think, for what I saw.
It is filming and paying people, but I mean, like I said, it's not, you know, union rates or anything amazing, but it's still,
it's something. You know. I think that's really nice of you, because usually I hear about indie film, there's very little money involved and they get food, and that's usually all I hear. So I think that's awesome.
That's not fair, because I mean, if you're creating a project and you're expecting people to add value to something that may ultimately benefit you in some way, you know, it's your idea and you're writing this. So why should they be out their gas money and their time and, you know, not get anything for being there for hours on end? I just feel it's the right thing to do. And, you know, my goal is hopefully to raise more money, perhaps for the next time around, instead of paying things out of my own jeans. Maybe I just will pay people more, but I feel like the next projects I do, I have to increase what I did the last time.
Oh, that's great. I think that's great. How's your reception been? Obviously, you've won a Canadian awards. Has it gotten over the States? Obviously, they've seen it at Sony. How's the reception been?
Yeah, it actually, the reception's been amazing. I think it's up to 18 film festival awards to date, and it had screenings in Texas and Nevada. In the States, of course, Los Angeles at Sony Studios, and it just won Best Sketch Comedy at Asia Web Awards in Seoul, Korea. And it is screening in, I believe it's November 25th and 26th in Rome, Italy, where it's also an official selection. So it's playing at the 21st Century Museum of Modern Art in Rome.
That's awesome. You must be so happy for something just came out of your head. This is great.
It is. It's such a delight. You know, I have never been to Los Angeles before. I had never been anywhere like that. And I'd always been hoping for some type of opportunity. And my acting coach had kind of instilled in me, you know, don't be one of those actors who just goes to Los Angeles because you want to go to Los Angeles. Go when you're invited. And so wow. I thought, okay, I'm going to have to wait till I'm invited. I may never be invited. Yep. You know, dramatic actress thoughts. And then here we write Danger Pay. And, you know, I had this whole thought probably the evening before I got the email from LA Webfest thinking, you know, why did I shoot all these six episodes? Does this matter to anybody? And you're kind of having these melodramatic thoughts about this exertion of effort, you know, building websites, building social media platforms that, you know, it's a day in, day out thing. You know, here we are a year plus later and I'm still spending day to day some time on Danger Pay. But then, you know, this thing came in and I literally had, you know, tears. I was so emotionally overcome to get this invitation to go to LA and be at Sony Studios. I was invited to speak on three different panels, Women Warriors of the Web Series World, producing and starring in your own web series and producing your web series in Canada. So there were three web series, three panels over 3 days at Sony. It was just a real gift. And then of course, Cary Grant Theater was where the awards were held. Jimmy Stewart Theater was where the screening was, and just, you know, a real honor to think something I filmed in my house, you know, with an idea made it this far.
It's well, that's amazing. Awesome. Isn't that great that you have the avenue of the web and you get to meet me and you get to meet hundreds of other people just for something you did for fun? Obviously you want Absolutely. To do something with it. This is great. I think that's awesome.
It really shows the power of creating something, I think. And it's, you know, really an idea to me that says to other filmmakers, if you have something you're thinking about, you know, don't kind of think, well, why should I do this? Or no one's going to watch it or, you know, whatever. At bare minimum, it's a learning experience for you to make your next project better. And you never know, as a pleasant surprise, where it may take you. What I've thought, you know, to wake up to this award from Seoul, Korea. And actually, that was the first win for Danger Pay. It was winning Best Sketch Comedy at Asia Web Awards. But at the same week, I also received my first personal win. I won an award of recognition for leading actress from Indie Fest Film Awards in La Jolla, California. So that. I actually have my first trophy being shipped to me by whatever courier it is, but it's supposed to be showing up in the next 2 weeks, a beautiful 24-karat gold-plated trophy with my name engraved as being a winning leading actress.
That's so cool. I think yes. That's awesome. I think that's really, really cool. I don't have any other questions on the web series unless I missed something.
No, I think you've covered all the episodes really, really well.
Okay, good. Now, you said we were talking. You say you have a film coming up. I don't know how much you want to discuss. I haven't watched it yet, so just tell me a little bit about it.
Sure, I can. The film is called Super Speed Dates. I filmed the film itself in a single day in my basement, set decorated to be an upscale lounge. If you've seen the poster, those posters, the photos from there are obviously from the basement. Hence the overlaying leftover coffee shop I had the next day for the Danger Pay episode. So, Super Speed Dates was shot. I believe there was 11 actors, 3 background actors, and about 15 or 16 crew. So we had nearly 30 people in my basement for a day. Actors came from Edmonton and Saskatchewan also to come and be a part of the cast.
Oh, wow.
And it was a play on an idea about a group of women going to a super speed dating event and going there and meeting some gentlemen in plain clothes who were giving very less than super answers to speed dating questions. Mm. So, a bit of a superhero montage.
Cool.
But in plain clothes. So, you know, questioning these guys that you see as superheroes and what answers they would really give in real life situations if they were just being authentic. And then, of course, the other question is maybe these guys are just kind of crazy. It's a lot of double entendres, but every line has an undertone or a purpose behind it, and it is in the festival circuit currently. It's also screened in Toronto, Texas. It was a semi-finalist at the Winchester Film Festival in the UK, screened in Florida. So it's done quite well as also. The final festivals, I believe, will be taking place in January, so it should be released early 2018 online on my personal YouTube channel. It's about a 10-minute, 15-second short film, but I've really enjoyed it. And, of course, original music composed throughout the entire thing, much like Danger Pay. So I'm really pleased with the project that we made, and nobody has ever seemed to pick up on the fact it's a basement.
Cool. Is Woodrow show up? I have to ask.
No, Woodrow does not show up. Awesome. I kind of wish Woodrow could be a part of it.
That would be kind
of
cool.
No, he was not. Instead, you'll meet Clark. You'll meet Tony. You'll meet Bruce W., Bruce B., and, of course, Dick Grayson.
Oh, there we go. So you're definitely going superhero theme. Clark Kent. Yeah. Super. Okay, well, I know you said I could watch it at a time, but I was going to wait. We'll do that next.
Sure. I think we should chat again when it comes out. I'll send it to you maybe before it goes online so you can have a sneak preview.
That would be great. Are you ready for your fun questions?
Yes, I am.
Okay, the first one's really easy. Nobody's had a problem yet. Favorite film?
Favorite?
Film?
Film?
Yes.
Meet the Parents.
Oh, wow. Meet the Parents. One, I presume, not two. Just that's it. Just
the original one. And I actually had the opportunity to meet Jay Roach in person once, the director of the film. And I thought it was pretty awesome because I love awkward comedy. And that film to me just has that throughout the entire thing. Bad to worse, bad to worse.
Yeah, it's a very awkward comedy. That's a weird. I like the choice. I just think it's weird. So maybe you've answered my second question, the one that everybody tells me it's hard, but I don't think it is. It's Friday night, you have people over, you're having a few drinks, they want to watch a film, you're feeling lazy. What do you put on?
Oh, that's a good question, because I have, I think, you know, gone to comedies before, but it depends on the audience. I think if there's a nice thing to watch, though, I would go with Samsara, of all things.
How do you
I don't know
that?
If you've ever seen it. Samsara, S-A-M-S-A-R-A.
Okay, I'm going to go find it. I've never heard of it, so.
Okay, it is probably the most amazingly beautiful, breathtaking film you could ever watch with absolutely no dialogue throughout the entire film. Oh. But if you have it on and everyone's feeling lazy and they're not wanting to chat much, that film, no matter who it is, whether it's been my 83-year-old mother or my 60-year-old film coach or, you know, 20-year-old friends, whoever comes over, they're deeply enthralled with it and watch it the entire way through.
Okay, I'm going to go find it. Until next time you see me, you can ask if I've seen it, but I will have.
I will, because it's absolutely beautiful images. I came across the film from a cinematographer who teaches cinematography, and in the course he showed many scenes from it because it is absolutely visually eye candy. It's beautiful.
Wow. Now I have to ask a question. Have you seen the new Blade Runner?
I have.
Now, of a film, forget the dialogue, so I'm even going to go there. To me, that was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
I thought it was a very beautiful film. I would agree. But this one, there's something about the visual, the color, and seeing different places around the world that probably very few cameras have ever gone or captured that type of image. A lot of time-lapse work, that type of thing. So it's like an art, beautiful piece to watch.
I'm on it. You found me something I haven't seen. I'm quite impressed, which is very hard. Usually I challenge people and they can't find me anything I haven't seen, but that I've never heard of. So
good.
Now, the last question's really, really easy.
Okay.
You're at the theater. You're going to see a film. What do you buy?
Oh, okay. If I, like, tickets to go see a movie, you mean?
Nope. Concession stand. You can see it tonight. I don't care. Concession. Just concessions.
Okay. Well, I'm a bit of a nerd, so we have the Costco coupons usually.
There you go. See that.
Popcorn and a drink, and that's usually it. No candy. Popcorn and a drink.
What do you drink? I always need to know.
Diet Coke, no ice.
I'm glad. You're my favorite.
Why is that? What do you get?
I get the same thing you do. I always get no ice. I can't stand ice.
No. Too much rattling, too
cold,
everything.
But it's funny because I go to a restaurant, I order a drink with no ice. I will not have ice in drinks.
No ice.
Oh, my God. Thank you. You made me so happy today. Well, thank you for your time. Now, tell everybody again where they can find Danger Pay and when your new film is going to be out on the web so everybody knows when to find it.
Sounds good. Okay, Danger Pay currently is on YouTube and on Funny or Die. On YouTube, it's youtube.com/DangerPayseries.
Or they can just search Danger Pay. That's what I did and had no problems.
Or search Danger Pay Series or Danger Pay, yes. And then Funny or Die, I have a channel on Funny or Die. It's funnyordie.com, and then it's Carolyn Bridget Kennedy. So you find me, and then my web series is all underneath there. Super speed dates will be online in 2018. I'm going to announce when, and I'll probably do a little promo blitz of when it's coming out. So people, if they follow me on Twitter at Carolyn B. Kennedy, they'll see that in my news stream announcing when it's coming out. I'm planning on launching it on my personal YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Carolyn B. Kennedy.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. It was great. Thanks.
And I want to hear Danger Tay got greenlit next time I talk to you, because I'm looking forward to it.
I am hoping so. I have my fingers crossed, and I'm feeling pretty positive about it.
Thank you again. Have a great day.
Thanks.